This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way. Hey, Molly.
Matthew, I'm still chewing.
What? What if I told you that one of your favorite podcast hosts was going to be on Jeopardy on Monday night, April 8th, 2019?
Oh, do you mean Terry Gross?
Nope. Guess again.
Ira Glass.
Nope.
Oh. Matthew Amster Burton.
That's right.
Yeah!
Tune in to your local Jeopardy affiliate at 7 or 7:30 p.m. on Monday night, April 8th. If you're listening to this after that, too late.
See you in front of the TV. I'm Molly.
And I'm Matthew.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and you can't have any.
And today we are talking about MSG.
As our listeners may know, June has become a fan of the show.
Yeah.
And she was asking me yesterday what we were going to be taping today.
Oh, yeah. This is
interesting. Trying to explain MSG to her, I got nowhere.
Well, I think you'd start with it's like salt.
I was like, it's the thing that makes foods taste more like themselves. It's in prosciutto. It's in tomatoes. Cooked tomatoes. It's in Parmesan cheese. It's umami.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure as soon as you said umami, she was like, all right, I got other things to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I've heard this spiel from you before, Mom. Mm-hmm. So we might get a little science-y on this episode. And at some point, Molly's going to ask me a question that I don't know the answer to. And either I'll look it up or I'll say I'll look it up later and then forget.
And on the recent episode we did about, was it frozen carbonated beverages? Slurpees.
Yes. Flurpees.
Flurpees. I went a little bit too deep into
frozen
carbonated beverage machines.
Was that the one where you took us through minute by minute? No, that was Cheetos.
That was the Cheesy Puffs episode.
Oh, wow.
No, in this one, I'm afraid I'm going to have to reel you in.
I think you are going to have to reel me in.
The way that you had to sort of reel me in on frozen carbonated beverages.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah. Okay. So, MSG, memory lane. Do you have any?
I heard about MSG as a kid because
yeah,
we had like a Chinese restaurant down the street, like Chinese American food. As we all know, it was called Hunan. It was in Cassidy Square.
And I've now been to Cassidy Square and it's now at Trader Joe's. No, that's what the market is.
Yeah. What is it now? I can't remember what it is now where Hunan used to be. But anyway, we used to go there. I loved Hunan. And I remember my mom complaining in the 80s that eating Chinese food made her fingers puffy from the MSG.
So,
and I know we're going to do some serious debunkage.
Okay. So there's an amazing story behind your mom saying that.
But can we do your memory lane? Did you have anybody with puffy fingers in your childhood?
No, but I definitely also got the message that, like, you know, MSG was a thing at Chinese restaurants that could make you feel sick. I don't know where I first heard this.
I feel like I remember my mom standing on the scale the morning after being in a Chinese restaurant and feeling that, like, she felt that she was, like, retaining water or something.
Let's start off with a little background on what MSG is, then we'll get into, like, how this story got started.
Okay, because it's fascinating.
It is. So MSG is a food additive that goes back thousands of years in the form of things like fermented fish sauce, which is still popular in Asia, but in the past was very popular in, like, ancient Rome.
It was called colatura, right?
Or garum.
Oh, mm-hmm. Oh, garum. Okay. Yep.
It is in aged cheese. It is in dried mushrooms. It's in tomato paste. These are all things that have it in like large quantities.
Cured pork.
Cured pork, absolutely.
Or maybe all cured meats.
It is the flavor of umami. And what umami is in 1908, a Japanese biochemist named Kikunae Ikeda at Tokyo Imperial University was investigating why broth made with kombu seaweed tasted savory in a way that was distinct from like salty things or browned foods.
How do you even quantify that? I mean, how did he know it wasn't just his perception?
That's a good question. I mean, I think the answer is he was a biochemist.
Do you ever just sit around and think like, well, so for instance, you and I were just eating English muffins.
Yeah.
Do you ever sit around and think about, like, does an English muffin with butter taste the same to you as it does to me?
Oh, I mean, like, how high are you?
I'm not high at all right now. No, but I think about this all the time. Like,
sure.
You're wearing your purple sweatshirt again.
Mm-hmm.
Does the way I see the purple look the same as the way you see the purple?
So that's a good question. There's no real empiric way to test that. But, I mean, we can say that people seem to respond to it in similar ways.
The same way
my sweatshirt, that is. Everybody seems to respond by saying, cool sweatshirt, bro.
The same way that we can all think about things like aged cheese or dried mushrooms, prosciutto, and we can all kind of infer like what mm-hmm. the unifying savoriness is that
right.
they all
so,
have.
I mean, we can all kind of agree on what things are savory. There's no way to know really if we're all experiencing like qualitatively that savoriness in the same way.
Here's a question for you.
It would seem weird if we didn't, though, kind of, right?
It would seem really weird. I mean, you know, given that there are like, for instance, like tasting notes for wines,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that assumes a certain like concordance among like palates.
It does assume a concordance.
What is wrong with me?
Isn't a concordance like a...
I'm talking like I'm high. This is how
right,
I talk
exactly.
when I'm high.
Well, I mean, I did just serve you something with a bunch of MSG, and I've heard that MSG is a thing at Chinese restaurants that makes you use big words.
No, but seriously. So MSG, monosodium glutamate.
Yes.
It's a molecule, the same way that like sodium...
Right, so it is. It's a salt.
Sodium chloride is a molecule,
like sodium chloride is a salt. But in this case, the companion ion to the sodium is not chloride, but glutamate, which is an amino acid.
Okay, and it just happens to be naturally occurring in some foods, the way that sodium is naturally, like sodium chloride is naturally occurring in some foods.
Right, exactly.
But we're also able to synthesize it the same way we can synthesize sodium chloride.
And the key thing is, just like with sodium chloride, there is no difference between the natural MSG found in Parmesan cheese and artificial MSG that's synthesized in a lab.
Do you remember when I thought you had studied chemistry?
I mean, I took several chemistry classes.
I did too, but I think there was a time when I thought you had a degree in chemistry for some reason, and then I was shocked to discover that we both had degrees in biology.
Well, I was wearing that shirt that said ask me about my chemistry degree. It was a purple shirt, but to you it looked chartreuse.
Okay. Just go on.
So Ikeda, he coined the term umami, which in Japanese just means delicious taste. And like the year after he first isolated MSG, which was 1908.
That long ago?
Oh, yeah. This was 1908. And so it was first produced commercially in 1909 under the name Ajinomoto, which means like the origin of flavor. And that Ajinomoto is still the world's most popular brand of MSG, and it's kind of used as a generic term for it in Japanese.
The way that we talk about, the way that we use the term MSG here, they use Ajinomoto?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Absolutely. So it's a bit of an oversimplification to say that MSG is the flavor of umami, but it's the main flavor, and the other umami flavors are very closely related to it. They're all glutamate molecules, slightly different conformations.
Okay.
Concordances.
Oh, God. I'm so sorry. I mean, I take it all back. I don't know what happens to me sometimes, but I don't like it.
I mean, to be fair, you did use the word correctly, and I just pounced on it like a jerk.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Great. Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks for
that. So the next part of the story is 1968. All right.
Okay. And this, this is the part. So to be fair, this was in a recent This American Life story.
Yes, which we'll link to.
Okay.
It's it was an amazing story.
It was really fantastic. Take it away, Matthew.
Okay. In 1968, a Chinese-American doctor named Robert Homan Kwok sent a letter to the New England Journal of Medicine, and they gave his letter the headline Chinese Restaurant Syndrome. In the letter, he described, quote, numbness at the back of the neck, gradually radiating to both arms and the back, and general weakness and palpitation when eating at Chinese-American restaurants. And he identified this as being different from when he had Chinese food in China, where he grew up. And he speculated that maybe MSG had something to do with this. I don't think the New England Journal of Medicine would publish a letter like this today.
It's highly speculative.
Right.
It seems based on nothing.
So what followed was months and months of letters from mostly non-Chinese readers attributing all sorts of maladies to MSG, like everything from like my finger felt funny to death. Like, as you would expect.
A lot of this was racist.
Yeah, there was a lot
extremely
of racist shit, including, so MSG was already widely used in processed foods and other restaurants, but all of the discussion focused on Chinese restaurants. There was a story in the New York Times that alleged that Chinese restaurants were sneaking all sorts of things onto your plate,
God.
Such as snake meat, dog meat, and MSG.
Yeah, and these were all myths that I heard as a kid.
Right.
Like, these kinds of, like, gross things. They really had legs.
So it really seems like
these racist myths. Not the dogs
yes.
or the snakes. Snakes don't have legs.
Snakes do not have legs. But they can get around really quickly, even
so. Fascinating, right?
I was gonna say we should do an episode about snakes.
Okay, go on.
So it really seems like everything people say about, you know, I ate MSG and got this reaction goes back to this letter in 1968.
This one letter to the editor. It wasn't even the result of a study.
It was just a letter. There have been studies. What they find is if you invite to the lab a bunch of people who think that they're sensitive to MSG, and then you divide them into a control group and a treatment group, and you give the treatment group a large dose of MSG, mm-hmm. and you give the control group a placebo, there's no difference between the two groups.
The other thing that I wonder about is, so Robert Homan Kwok mm-hmm. Had immigrated from China.
Yeah.
He says that the food that he had in Chinese-American restaurants in the U.S., did this to him, but not food in his native China. Wouldn't they have been using MSG there too?
Yes.
I mean, if it was produced in Japan nearby, starting in the early 1900s, was it being widely used in Chinese food?
I think so.
At some point?
I mean, it's certainly possible that Chinese-American restaurants were using more of it at the time, but it does not cause any of those things.
Correct.
So,
I mean, this is all very poor logic.
Yeah, and there's a name for this that I learned in the course of researching this. When you think that something is good for you and it actually makes you feel better, even though it doesn't have any inherent effects, that's called a placebo.
Mm-hmm. A placebo effect.
Right, placebo effect. The opposite, when you think something is bad for you and then it makes you feel bad because that's what you think is going to happen, that's called the nocebo effect.
It's fascinating to me how common both of these things are in human behavior and human experience.
Right. And I mean, like, they work even if you know about them.
Yes, exactly. I have no doubt that people will learn and sort of integrate into their brains this story about Robert Homan Kwok and this letter.
Yep.
And yet they will continue to feel that they are the exception and that MSG does something to them.
Also, they'll be mad at us because we said they're not really allergic to MSG.
This is a thing I've noticed. Oh, no. We are going to get it.
Okay. So Helen Rosner, can we call her a friend of the show? We met her once. Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, Helen, can we be friends?
Yeah. She's one of the best food writers. She wrote a great piece for The New Yorker about MSG in which she goes to the Ajinomoto factory and does the factory tour in, I think, Kawasaki, Japan. And she writes in the article, "Despite MSG's image makeover, I found that plenty of people remain resistant to incorporating it into their cooking. They're willing to bring MSG into their homes as a component in other foods, more than happy to accept it as a flavoring powerhouse in Doritos, mm-hmm. instant ramen, canned soup, and bouillon cubes, or at least happy to accept its euphemisms like hydrolyzed soy protein and
that
autolyzed
stuff's everywhere.
Yeast.
Yes.
But the notion of buying and using the raw ingredient is often a bridge too far. And I found, like, even though I knew all of this, it wasn't until, like, a few years ago that I brought brought home some pure MSG and started integrating it into my cooking.
Brandon started using MSG in a few things at Delancey, like when we would make ranch dressing in-house.
And oh, that sounds like it would be great.
Yeah. Ranch dressing really needs a little MSG. It's way better with it.
I think like there are some things for which MSG is kind of an inherent part of the flavor profile, and ranch dressing is for sure one of those.
Yes. But I remember, so I was typing up some of the recipes in the recipe binder at Delancey last year, and I remember finding the original ranch dressing recipe that he developed maybe like 5 years ago for us to serve. And it called for MSG, and one of the cooks had come and scratched it out. And I asked Brandon about it, and he, you know, sort of grumbled and was like, yeah, so-and-so, whichever cook was running that station at the time, was really resistant to using MSG, didn't want to do it. Didn't want to do it. And so Brandon wound up using a little bit of, like, Bragg's liquid aminos or something instead.
Yeah, which is the same thing.
Yeah.
With, like, a few other flavor molecules in there.
But even recently, eating dinner at his house, he made a really delicious salad dressing. And my mom asked what was in it. And it turned out there was a tiny pinch of MSG in it, in addition to all the other things.
Yeah, it's really good in salad dressings because that's supposed to be something, like, intensely flavored and savory.
Mm-hmm. This episode is brought to you by Panama City Beach, Florida.
Molly, I am sick. It snowed this morning.
It did.
It's mid-March. I can't handle this anymore. Where should I go? What should I do?
I think that you should try Panama City Beach, Florida.
Okay, why?
Yeah. Okay, here's the deal. All right, so, Matthew, this place, endless family fun and heart-pounding thrills. I don't know if that's your kind of thrill.
Well, but I have a family. Okay. I have fun. Okay. I like fun. I have a heart.
What do you think about romance?
I have a big heart.
This place has romance. Are you ready?
Yes.
Here's the deal. Okay. So you can start with a romantic getaway. Relax, reconnect, dine on the beach with Lori.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody could do that. It's part of the Panama City Beach package.
Lori is included in the package?
They've got breathtaking sunsets, live music. And then the next morning you could get up and bike along the beach together.
Oh, this sounds great.
Yeah. Or take an airboat tour. I could go on and on.
Can we just like leave our kid on the beach to do whatever?
Sure. She's old enough. Yeah.
All right. So make it special with a romantic getaway. Make it incredible. Make it exhilarating. Make it yours at Panama City Beach, your real fun beach.
Plan your escape now at visitpanamacitybeach.com.
One way that we know that MSG is not bad for you is because your body is always full of it, even if you're not eating it, because glutamate is an amino acid. Mm-hmm. And in the body, it's used for a wide variety of things. It's involved in digestion, but it's probably the most common excitatory neurotransmitter in the brain.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so interesting.
So this is not to say, there are a lot of things that occur naturally in the body that if you eat too much of them are toxic.
Yes.
And it's quite possible that MSG is in that category if you eat a ton of it. But there have been lots and lots of experiments where people have been given way more than you would ever get in a meal or a day of meals. And it just doesn't have any negative effects.
What does MSG do on the level of taste? Why does it do what it does?
I'm so glad you asked. So there are receptors on the tongue specifically for MSG. There, you've got at least five types of taste receptors.
Nature made us to eat MSG, it would seem.
So
I'm starting a new religion.
Yeah.
And here, my friends, is its first
tenet?
Tenet, yes. Yes, we were made. We were made for so many things, and one of those things is eating MSG.
Yeah, so on the tongue and other parts of the mouth.
Is this enough to start a religion? I'm not sure.
I think religions have been started on less.
Oh, okay. I'm going to keep working on it.
Throw in something about snakes. That comes up in a lot of religions.
Mm, okay.
So on your tongue, you've got sweet receptors, salty receptors, bitter receptors, sour receptors, and umami receptors.
And that would be receptors from MSG.
And, probably we're going to discover some more receptors if we haven't already. But, it's clear that, when MSG binds to those receptors in your mouth, it enhances the flavor of other things, especially the bitter and sour things.
Mm-hmm.
It gives a savory sensation.
How do you know how much to use?
In the same way that you know how much salt to use.
Ah, just by tasting.
So by tasting and by having experience using it.
Okay. Okay.
Isn't like, do you find like it's interesting? This is probably not interesting now that I say it, but like, it feels weird to me sometimes as I like see myself, watch myself cooking and like my hand sort of knows how much salt to use.
Oh, totally.
And like, I didn't measure it. And like, I guess what I'm saying is I'm some sort of superhero.
That's what salt, it was building to for
salty man.
Me. Salty man. I think that's called Salt Bay.
So,
yeah.
I guess what I'm saying
is... He knows exactly how much to use.
That's right.
And how to use it.
Yeah. Salt Bay is the original salty superhero.
So this seems like something where... you know, if you've got an like an Asian grandma, you've probably known this forever.
Right.
You are
ahead
of...
I feel like everything I've been saying is like kind of from a Eurocentric perspective.
Yes.
Because like, yeah, if you grew up in an Asian American household, like none of this is news to you.
Yeah.
But if you don't already use MSG, it's like if you were using honey in your cooking and like hadn't tried pure sugar yet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not that,
that's an interesting
comparison. Not that you have to use it in everything, or that, you know, it's not something you have to use in everything. There are some things that it's better in and some that it doesn't make much difference or isn't good.
Yeah.
But it's a great ingredient to have in its pure form when you need it.
Okay. Cool. Interesting. Okay. So like, how do they make this stuff?
Okay. I did not know this at all either. So most global MSG is produced by bacterial fermentation in a process similar to making vinegar or yogurt.
Is there like an MSG mother?
I guess there must be an MSG mother.
A SCOBY.
Yes. But it's, yeah. So like.
Are we just, we're probably taking this too far.
I don't know if we are. Like, I didn't try to look into like what that looks like. I haven't been on the Ajinomoto factory tour, but I feel like I should next time I go to Japan.
Is it in Tokyo?
It's outside of Tokyo.
Okay.
Easy to get there.
I kind of want to go.
Yeah, Kawasaki is a cool city. It's like a super industrial part of the Tokyo area. And at night, you can take an industrial boat tour and like go by all these like lit up, like smoking, belching factories with tubes and smokestacks. And what else do factories have? Widgets. They're probably making widgets.
No doubt.
At night. I really want to do this.
Do they give a lecture on supply and demand while you're on the tour?
That seems
right.
I just got a little aroused when you said that.
So, Matthew, what do you... So, admittedly, I have...
Admit
to,
it?
Well, I have to say that there was a container of MSG in my house.
Uh-huh.
And then when Brandon and I separated and he moved out... I sent it off with him because I wasn't used to using it. And now I feel dumb. So tell me, like, what would I want to use this in?
Okay. Soups, stews, beans, anything with a savory broth. It's really going to shine. And something that is worth doing is deliberately overdoing it a little. Like, take out a ladleful of broth and try putting in too much MSG and see what that tastes like. In the same way you would, like, how you learn, like, when you've oversalted something.
You served us red-cooked pork today uh-huh. for lunch, and you felt that you had over-MSG'd it.
Maybe a little bit.
But then when I was eating it,
mixed with rice, like, I think it was... just a matter of like when you taste a sauce by itself, it tastes too strong because it's a sauce.
I'm really curious to try this because I find it hard to imagine how you could over MSG something. Like I can well imagine how something can be too salty. We all know what that's like. But how you can make something taste too savory.
Well, it's not too savory. It's that it gives it sort of like an unpleasantly strong sort of lip smackiness. Like kind of an astringency, but not really like a tannic astringency, just more like, you know, like this is like really getting into like all the little crevices of my mouth in a way that's just a little too much.
Is it like sometimes when you can feel your salivary glands going and it's kind of painful?
It's totally like that. Yeah, because umami really makes you salivate.
I'm salivating just listening to you talk about
I'm tasting
like.
Some straight MSG. It tastes like nothing though.
Okay. Oh, that's weird.
Yeah. I mean.
No, it does taste like something. It tastes savory.
It tastes savory.
Oh, that's really weird. You know, I feel like I've tasted this flavor in like a really plain, like if you cook bok choy in a wok
mm-hmm.
with garlic and some oil, and then maybe you put a little bit of chicken stock in and thicken it a little bit with cornstarch.
Yes.
I feel like the flavor of that kind of like brothy sauce. I feel like I've tasted this kind of savoriness in
yeah.
it.
Yeah. You know, it's also like you use better than bouillon too, right?
Yes.
I don't know if that actually, it probably doesn't actually include added MSG per se, but it's definitely high in glutamates and like has that same sort of like punchy savoriness.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. That is really, I'd never tasted that before. I mean, yep. on its own. And that's cool.
Yeah, isn't it?
That's really cool.
So salad dressings, definitely. Like okay. one of the best places to use it. And like it must have been on the cabbage episode probably when we talked about the zakushi salty cabbage
yes,
salad.
With sesame oil.
Yeah. And like I always put a pinch of MSG in that.
Okay.
It's one of my favorite things. We'll post the recipe to that again for that again on spilledmilkpodcast.com.
So you wrote here on the agenda that you can use it in eggs. Tell me about this.
Oh yeah, it's good in scrambled eggs. I don't do it every time, mm-hmm. But you know, that sort of fried egg savoriness is really perked up with a little MSG.
Okay.
You know, in the same way, like I don't do it that often because I'm more likely in that case to reach for like a little soy sauce or fish sauce or hot sauce that's going to have MSG in it.
Okay. And you put it in...
But like in scrambled eggs where I'm probably not going to like add a liquid seasoning to the yes. scrambled eggs. Yeah.
Okay. What about... So you wrote here soups and stews and beans.
Yeah.
Would you put it in just like cowboy beans? Like
a, oh, that
like
would
a
be
pot
great.
Of like pinto bean type
yeah,
things?
Yeah, I mean, because cowboy beans, the way I make them, usually have a little bacon and fire roasted tomato and like things...
Those
things
are already
that have other glutamate
yeah.
Containing ingredients... Like a little MSG will like take that to the next level.
Oh, I'm like really kind of like
there's
geekily
like,
excited
there's,
about this.
There's kind of there's I don't know a lot about this, but there's evidence that there's a synergistic effect among the slightly different varieties of the glutamate molecule, and like if you eat two or three of those varieties together, it's better than just one of them.
Now, what if you used it? So we think of savory broadly as a non-sweet mm-hmm. flavor. What if have you ever tried using MSG in a sweet application?
What happens? I don't think it would be very good.
Would it be bad?
I mean, I think I should try
to,
this before I make any pronouncements.
Because trying to imagine,
I think it's not. My guess is it's not going to draw out the aspects of the sweet food that you want to emphasize because
fair enough.
Because it's going to draw out whatever savory flavors are there, and I could see this working. Like I'm sure, like you know, a talented pastry chef
yes.
who is being very deliberate about like I want like a savory flavor to come through in this dessert. I'm sure pastry chefs like that do work with MSG and do cool things. For me at home making like a pan of brownies, I don't think it's going to help. It's my
okay.
guess.
That makes sense. I have trouble imagining it.
Yeah.
Okay.
One thing I did while researching this episode was like I went on to Epicurious and New York Times, other recipe sites, and just searched for MSG to see like how many recipes I could find that had it. Not very many. One that I did find that sounded really good was a recipe in the New York Times for a chickpea tofu, which is not really tofu. It's like a dumpling sort of, or like a dough made from chickpea flour.
Mm-hmm.
And he uses MSG in that. And as always, it says optional. And so like whenever you see MSG in a recipe in English, I feel like it says optional.
Yeah.
To the point that I recently read Austin Bush's book, The Food of Northern Thailand, which is a great book. It's like, it's a real like, you know, ethnographic document, like with beautiful photos. He takes great photos and, you know, dishes like the way a grandma would make them in northern Thailand.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, grandmas in northern Thailand are using MSG. So there'll be a recipe that'll call for like, you know, pork blood, pork stomach, pork belly, MSG, optional.
As though it would be way right. harder for a like Eurocentric reader to stomach right. the idea
like,
of
yeah,
MSG
gonna,
rather than
pork
blood.
I'm going to throw these cubes of pork blood, but MSG, I don't know. So that's about it. Like I am more so, I was going to say more so than usual. No, I'm always curious to hear how our listeners are cooking, but like I want to know like how you're using MSG in your cooking because I feel like I could be doing more.
I want to know if our listeners are using it.
I'm going to guess some are and most aren't.
Yeah.
But that let us know.
Where do you buy it?
I buy it at Uwajimaya, the Japanese supermarket. And this is, in fact, the label has worn off. This is Ajinomoto brand.
Mm. Are you brand loyal?
No. it's like table salt. It's just a pure chemical.
Okay. Cool. Wow. Okay. Well, this has been an episode of a lot of learning.
Yeah. I feel like I learned some things.
I feel like I need a nap.
I think my finger swelled up.
Oh, gosh. We can have dessert now. We had
red
cooked pork, and now we can have dessert.
Yes.
That'll perk me up.
We're having for dessert?
Walter's Mandler.
The world's greatest candy bar. This episode was brought to you by Panama City Beach, Florida.
Matthew, I've been dreaming of a beach vacation.
Haven't we all?
It is winter, and I hear that Panama City Beach has sugar white sands and turquoise waters.
Yeah, but you know what I'm in it for? The heart-pounding thrills.
Matthew, I can't wait to see what you do in Panama City Beach, Florida. Make it your own. The real fun beach, Panama City Beach.
Plan your escape today at visitpanamacitybeach.com.
Please, I don't know, tell us some MSG stories. Tell us what you like to cook.
Tell us some MSG stories, as long as they're not, I went to a Chinese restaurant and then I felt funny afterwards, because we've heard that story.
No. I mean, tell us some stories about, like, delicious things you've made with MSG.
Exactly.
I should be more specific. You can tell us that on Facebook at facebook.com/spilledmilkpodcast.
Or on our website, spilledmilkpodcast.com, where we'll post the salty cabbage recipe. We'll post a link to Helen Rosner's article. We'll post a link to that This American Life story. Francis Lamb's chickpea tofu recipe.
Did you say that you'd put the salty cabbage recipe up there again?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to do it. Producer Abby's going to do it. Thanks, Producer Abby.
Thanks, Producer Abby. Yeah, our producer is Abby Circatella.
And we're on Instagram at Spilled Milk Podcast. And until next time, thank you for listening to Spilled Milk, the show that's now offering a boat tour where you can sail past our window and point at us and talk about supply and demand and see lots of, like, belching.
I'm Molly Weisenberg.
And I'm Matthew Amster Burton.
Mmm. Mmm.
Pretty good, right?
Mm-hmm. I just have to not think about the brown sauce.
Mm-hmm.
Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their summer splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in store or online at Whole Foods Market today.